Please be seated.
Good morning.
Good morning.
It's good to be back. It's not good to have so much humidity back, but it's good to be back. It's been a long time since I've read much about Abraham Lincoln or the Civil War, but as I recall, at Abraham Lincoln's second inaugural, held on March 4th, in his address delivered just 5 weeks before his assassination on Good Friday, April 14, 1865, he said something like this. Before the war began, both parties declared openly that they despised war, that they knew how terrible war was, and that they did not want this nation and its families to be divided by such an evil. And yet war came. He found it curious, he said, that soldiers and families on both sides read the same Bible and prayed to the same God, and yet each invokes God's assistance against the other side. Lincoln also declared how strange it was to him that any human being should dare to ask a just God assistance in extorting their bread and livelihood from the sweat and blood of other men who do not get to share in the fruits of their own labors. Obviously, here he was talking about slavery. Now, this was 1865, and Lincoln had set the slaves free, at least by presidential proclamation, in 1863. January 1st, in fact, 1863. What was going on? The slaves had been set free. At least they had been declared free, set free legally. Word of the Emancipation Proclamation had spread like wildfire from the White House across the entire nation, especially perhaps even across the fields and plantations of Virginia, Carolinas, Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, and you know the rest. Slavery had been legally abolished. All the headlines said it. And yet, in spite of this, a strange thing happened. Most slaves in the South went on living as though they were not free. There are lots of reasons for that, but one is simply the inertia of the status quo, ingrained oppression that can't bear change. That's what happens when you get used to something. Even though after the war, emancipation was enforced and followed through on for all people all over the South, former slaves continued to live like slaves. Many became sharecroppers on their former master's land, where life wasn't any better than it had been before the war. They said they were free, but they were not. One Alabama slave was faced with a northern newspaper reporter one day. The reporter asked him what he thought of the great emancipator Lincoln, whose proclamation should have changed this man's life. Here's what the man said. I don't know nothing about no Abraham Lincoln, except they say he sought us free. And I don't know nothing about that neither. What in the world was going on? A vicious, bloody war was fought. A document had been signed. Slaves had been legally emancipated. Yet most of those former slaves continued to live out their years, as did their children, in fear, saying things like, I don't know nothing about that neither. Slaves chose to remain enslaved in a debunked system, even though they were legally free. In many cases, they kept serving the same old masters their whole lives. I wonder if a lot of us might be like that too. We've been set free from sin and the power of sin, not just forgiven its effects. We get to take advantage of not only facing no eternal consequences for our sin, but we've actually been released from the power of sin over our lives to keep terrorizing us, to keep making us fail and hurt ourselves and hurt others. We're emancipated from the whole dirty system. We do not have to continue serving the same old master. We have a new master, a new deal, a new system that's freely available to us. We don't have to continue in those bad habits, those hurtful attitudes, those inclinations that tell us to make sure we serve ourselves and our own needs before we serve anybody else. But do we take advantage of that fact? Do we act like we have been released from bondage? Bondage to a master who constantly tells us we have to fall short of our potential because that's just who we are? We can't help it, we say. It's our nature. Cut us some slack. Well, no, Christ came to change our nature, not just what we do. We can become people that God means for us to be, the people that He created us to be and wants us to be. God allows us to be made new. He freed us. Do we behave like we are free of the old system? Or do we just talk about being set free from sin and then keep on living the same way? It's easy to do. We need to remember that former slaves who kept on behaving as slaves faced some difficult circumstances. There were lots of angry, well-armed people around them who obliged them to put up with their circumstances. They could not imagine freedom because they were forced to keep living in the old system. Well, what forces us to live in our old system? Is anybody holding a gun to our heads? In America, it's hard for us to imagine that we might be in bondage of anything, of any kind, to anything. This is the land of the free and the home of the brave. We can live where we want to live, travel where we want to travel, do whatever we want to do for a living, marry whoever we want to marry, eat what we want to eat, be addicted to whatever we want to be addicted to. Sometimes bondage masquerades as freedom. How many of us still can't shake ideas of, if I just get this, I'll be happy and life will be better. If I just get that, if I just live in that other neighborhood, if I just get that new job or that other health insurance plan, then I'll be happy and life will be better. If I could just get that guy to pay attention to me, or if I could just convince that girl to marry me. Most of you are beyond that, but not all of you. Then life would be really good. If I could learn how to do this or that, if. Are we ever satisfied? Ever content? Or are we in bondage to if? Contentment is just around the corner. If. If you travel in developing countries, what we sometimes call the third world, although that's not so much the common thing to say anymore, you see poverty and squalor in a lot of places. Of course, it's in our country too. But there's a lack of things that we take for granted. A lack of nutritious food, drinkable water, a sturdy home to live in, vehicles. We often look at how these people live and we're inclined to feel sorry for them. Or worse yet, we are repulsed by them. They need so much, we think. But stop and get to know these people. You'll find likely that they are content, that they are happy, that they are filled with joy. Because they know that it's not circumstances or what a person does or does not have that makes them happy. Simply being alive, knowing God and enjoying God, and living brings joy. These so-called impoverished people, as they gather in their humble churches, pray for us, American Christians, to have strength. Because they know how difficult it is for us to live in a culture surrounded by materialism, where we become blind to the fact that we are brainwashed into thinking things that we really don't need, thinking we need things that we really don't need. They wonder at how we can survive all the pressure to earn enough money, to pay all the bills, to be constantly told that things make our lives better, because they know it's all around us. They are afraid we might forget that only God makes our lives better. We might be tempted to think they just don't understand how it is. They are simple people. Well, I think they probably understand things better than we do. Jesus was once faced with this woman who had been bent and broken by an illness that affected her spine. She may have been on, she may have been what we call a hunchback, or she may have had rickets or scoliosis, we don't know. But she was bent over and could not straighten up. And she had been this way for 18 years, we're told. Perhaps after 18 years, she didn't even think about being healthy again because she had adapted. She'd gotten used to living the way that she had to live with her condition. We all do that. People can get used to almost anything. We live with our sin, our bondage to whatever it is that we are in bondage to, because we've gotten used to it. It has become our world, the way our life is, and we can't imagine anything else. But Jesus does the unimaginable. On the Sabbath, in the synagogue, he changes this woman's world by setting her free from needing to live with her condition. "Woman, you are set free from your ailment," he says. Now, she could have kept walking bent over, but she believed Jesus. She believed what Jesus had told her. And so she stood up straight. She was being watched by a bunch of people, but she stood up straight. She lived into the freedom that she had been given, and it changed her world. She didn't say, "Oh, sure, those are just words. Talk is cheap." No, she did what she was told she could now do. Of course, Jesus had laid his hands on her, and the text says that she was made straight. I know an Episcopal priest in California, he's retired now, who was always skeptical of healing ministry until one day a man with a crippled spine came into his office. This priest, Mike is his name, felt a strange and strong urging when this man walked through his office door. Although he had never felt such a thing before, he had a sense that God wanted to heal this man. Now, this man did not just have a few joints that needed to be cracked and that could be adjusted by a chiropractor. Discs were missing, and his spine was like a crooked stack of wooden blocks that you can't figure out how it's not falling over. They conversed for a while. With much fear and trepidation, Father Mike laid his hands on the man's back while he sat in a chair in his office and began praying. As Mike prayed, the vertebrae in the man's back started moving under the skin and popping and cracking and rearranging themselves. This freaked Father Mike out more than just a little. So he stopped and he asked the man, "Are you doing something with your back?" The man said, "No. Are you doing something with it?" Mike said, "No." And he went back to pray. Before that man left Father Mike's office, his entire spine had been realigned and restored. Both men were amazed, as well as grateful. They praised God together. Father Mike Flynn learned that day never to be afraid to pray for something that you think is impossible. I think a lot of times we assume that the lion's share of our faith is just rhetoric, that nothing real in the world has been changed, but that's not true. It can be easy for us just to keep on doing what we've always done and not believe that our situation is now different. "I don't know nothing about that neither." It can be easy for us to feel like we are still somehow under that burden or still held in the bondage of that debt or that habit or that guilt or shame that has slowed us down for so long. But we need to take it to heart that we have been set free from our ailment. Sin is a disease that God has dealt with. The chains are gone. We can stand straight again. We can take off that orange jumpsuit with the numbers on it and get off the prison bus. The reason Jesus could heal on the Sabbath was that he had become the Sabbath. Jesus is God's rest. As we draw close to Jesus, our Sabbath, let us truly experience, enjoy, and live into the new freedom that we have been given. It's not freedom to keep on sinning without consequences. It's freedom to understand and to feel the reality that life is truly full and rewarding without us needing to try to squeeze extra things into it that we shouldn't in order to make it better. Because that always backfires. As individuals, we know that God does many good things for us that change our lives. That's a part of our Sabbath experience. We need to understand collectively that God has done a great thing in our midst as a church community as well, and that He is still working in our midst. We are truly becoming the people God created us to be, and we are free to start living like it. Let us embrace the vision that God has for us as His people and as a church, the vision that He has made possible and that He brings into existence, and let's run with it.